Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. This is the Bob Davis Yoga Podcast, always a student. And in this podcast, I'm going to talk about three things. I'm going to talk about solitude, and I'm going to talk about ADHD, and I'm going to talk about yoga and how yoga helps with those things and why I like solitude, and tell you a little ADHD story as well in podcast 718, the Bob Davis Yoga Podcast, always a student. Well, if you do yoga, you know about hydration. In fact, if you do CrossFit, you know about hydration. If you have been an athlete, you know about hydration. But if you're just a yoga person like me, and you started and you teach yourself, and this is how, you may not know anything about hydration, and I didn't. I always drank a lot of water, but I found out about hydration when I got turned on to this product called Hydrus, H-Y-T-R-U-S, Hydrus. Now, if you want to check it out, you can go to HydrusPerformance.com, or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Get yourself some Hydrus. You yoga people, if you drink a quart of water before class, you're not even going to start getting hydrated until midway through the class. Hydrus is a really advanced beverage. You dilute Hydrus into 16.7 ounces of water, and what it will do is it will get electrolytes into your muscles immediately. It's amazing how it works. And it also does not have any sugar, which makes it really awesome. So get some Hydrus, and then when you get it, I'm going to talk one of these yoga podcasts. You can double up on the Hydrus. So you can put two capfuls into 16.7 ounces of water, and you'll be amazed what it does. You will sweat differently. You will stay cool. You will be able to crank out like you're the Energizer Bunny, which doesn't exist anymore. It's amazing. It's like a hand behind you that just keep, because you're hydrated. So I'll tell you more about Hydrus, but go to HydrusPerformance.com, H-Y-D-R-U-S. That is electrolytes, that is hydration without sugar, and it's revolutionary, HydrusPerformance.com. So I was talking on the last podcast about the Bob Davis Podcast and Alexa, and how if you have Alexa, you can go to TuneIn, and you can get a Bob Davis Podcast off TuneIn using Alexa. So you could be sitting on your couch, and you go to Alexa, go to TuneIn. Alexa, ask for Get Bob Davis Podcasts, and it would find them for you, and that's pretty cool. So I got an email from a listener, and this is the difference between talk radio listeners and podcast listeners. Podcast listeners are super excited and positive, and he said, you know, you can do that on Google Play right now. And in fact, he sent me the directions, which I have not opened yet because I'm ADD, so I didn't do it. But he said, you can actually do that on Google Play, because we are also on Google Play. And he goes, I get your podcast. I go on Google Home, and I use Google Home, and I just tell it to get the Bob Davis Podcast off Google Play, and it will. And it's way easier than Alexa. You don't even have to set it up. So if you're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Google Play, you can do that. Also, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, Spreaker. Originally started adding these different syndicated services for Android. Stitcher.com and TuneIn are both great for Androids. iTunes is the granddaddy of they have 500,000 podcasts on iTunes. But I'm finding out that these different syndicated services are awesome. So that's where you get the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks for listening and liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And I appreciate your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Yeah, I use the term always a student because that would be the title of this podcast if it were a pure yoga podcast. And I use the word the term always a student because I am humble about my experiences with yoga and humble about talking about yoga, because I don't want people to think that I am some yoga expert. The idea of these podcasts is for me to share my experiences about yoga, and for those to resonate or not resonate with you, or attract you or not attract you to yoga. And I wouldn't presume to be an expert on yoga. I've certainly practiced it a lot, and my point of view is that of a student. And so that's kind of the watchword or term that keeps me honest in my practice and keeps me honest with talking about this in a podcast, so I don't try to, you know, become some kind of authority about podcasts. There's things I'm certainly an authority on, but yoga is not necessarily one of those things. The other thing is, I got to mention this because this is just fun. The general manager of the Bob Davis podcasts, my mom, told me on the phone the other night, boy, when you're doing these podcasts where you just talk off the top of your head, you've really got to watch those you knows. You say you know all the time. It's really irritating. And I was thinking about this tonight, and I thought, I remembered we would travel a lot when I was a kid. We'd travel all through the country, and mom and dad and my sister and I, or just me and my mom and my dad. And obviously, at that time, the radio was kind of the focus. We always had the radio on. And we drove through a lot of rural towns and cities and places that didn't have very good radio. And I remember my mom as really a program director. You know, we'd be driving along and she'd go, why are they playing Buddy Greco? I've never heard Buddy Greco work with an organ. That's ridiculous. Or this is terrible. Why are they saying it that way? Or anything like that. She was super critical of the local radio stations where we went. So that's where I learned how to be a program director, which I did for years. And now she's the general manager of the Bob Davis podcast. But she is not above telling me how I should do what I do. I just think it's funny that that came up today. So there's three things that came up today that I think is very, very interesting and I want to talk about in the yoga podcast. And I'm doing it off the top of my head because it's Sunday night. I've spent the entire weekend working, and I spent last weekend working and all week working, and particularly working on these two political podcasts that I just finished, which I'm not even going to get into in this podcast. If you want to listen to them, they're the preceding two podcasts. 717 and 716 that took a lot of study and work and mapping and looking things up, and I'm exhausted. But I wanted to get this yoga podcast in before the end of the month. So I decided, you know, I was up there watching Homeland, and I thought, as soon as it was over, I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I have three more shows to watch. It's midnight. This is my time. This is like lunchtime to me. I'm going to go downstairs and quick knock out a podcast so I can post it on Monday, April 30th, and all will be well, because I just have one more podcast to do for the month. And so I'm doing that. And I decided today, there were two things that happened today that really became topics of interest for me. The first thing is, when I got up, usually when I get up, I don't look at my phone. I don't look at the internet. I don't do anything. I just sit there. And I make coffee, and I sit in my chair in a blanket and just sit there. And just kind of drink my coffee and get ready for what I'm going to do in the next, you know, work period. And I ran across this story on LinkedIn that said solitude is, it was a whole article, and I didn't even read the whole thing, so I don't even remember the specifics, but that's okay, because it's going to get us started down the road. Basically, it was three, four people who really prefer solitude. Two of them were creative people, and one of them, I don't know what he was doing. Then they talked about how they prefer solitude, and I thought that was great, because I was just thinking that it's really important for me to be alone. You know, that we live in a society now where we're with people all the time, and we're expected to be with people all the time, and people who prefer solitude seem strange. And I'm just going to tell you what I do with my solitude. So, and this gets into the ADHD a little bit, but this is not the ADHD story. I certainly have hyperactive disorder. I don't think it's, you know, at any level of what it was like when I was a kid. And there's also a yoga tie-in to this in a second, which I'll get to. But I find that when I am alone and when I can spend time alone, I can process things. And I've concluded that I need more time to process events that occur in my life. And when I'm really busy and really focused and there's a lot of work to be done and there are things happening fast and furiously in my business, I need even more time by myself to process how I'm going to handle what I'm going to do. And I process things in a very strange way. It's either I'm talking to myself or I'm thinking about it, or I'm talking to myself and thinking about it, or I'm doing something else and I'm thinking about it, or I'm dreaming about it, or whatever. And it takes a while for me to kind of process things that happen. And when I am around lots of people, because I'm kind of empathic, I'm also taking in lots of data from other people, it becomes difficult for me because part of it is I think I'm so focused on other people when I'm with other people that it's hard for me to actually process the things that are going on in my life. So I prefer solitude because I get up, I'm with myself, I spend time with myself. And by the way, if you do a home-based business such as this, you don't go anywhere. Now, I do a business meeting now once a week, which forces me out of the house and into a room with, you know, 100 other people, and that's great. But and by the way, from a position of solitude, I'm not a hermit. You know, I have friends and I go out and I do things. I also go out every Tuesday night with my friends and we talk crazy stuff. And, you know, I'm able to be social and do social things, but I much prefer to have that time where I am able to just kind of think about things and run through things and run through options and think about what I want to do and why I want to do it. And I find that my best work usually comes out of long periods of kind of sequestering myself and just, you know, processing. For example, just the last couple of podcasts I did took a lot of work, and I spent, you know, I could have gone out on Friday night. I could have gone out Thursday night. I could have gone out Saturday night. But instead, I decided to work and I decided to process all that stuff and go through all those websites and look up all that data for the political stuff and then sit down and fashion it into some kind of, you know, content. Got to watch the nose. And it really turned out great. I'm really happy about both of those podcasts as being baselines for the midterm election coming up. And if you're a yoga person and you don't want to talk about politics, I'm not trying to get you to listen to them or anything. I'm just saying, you know, that was a lot of work. But I came up with doing that because I sat and I thought for a long time, well, what am I actually thinking about? What's actually bothering me? What would be good to talk about? Why is that good to talk about? And this stuff takes a while to process, especially if you're the kind of person who's hyperactive. You have a lot of thoughts running through your mind really fast all the time. And the only time that those thoughts calm down is when I am on the mat. So when you do yoga, you are given a respite from the constant thinking. It's not like a pack of wolves. It's actually thoughts that I want to capture, but they go by so fast that it's almost impossible for me to capture them. So, you know, there I go again with the you-knows. So being able to be on the mat and be doing yoga and practicing a daily practice every day, you know, having a yoga practice every day, it helps with slowing those thoughts down. And then when I have the solitude, I can think about what I want to do and why I want to do it and all the different options. And I was a little surprised that somebody actually wrote an article about it, because apparently it's a thing now that people are never alone and they thrive. They crave, not thrive, but they crave solitude. And solitude is considered a strange and unusual thing these days. And, you know, because I think we all think about the guy who lives in the woods, you know, the Unabomber. Or we think about the crazy person who's the shut-in. Or we think of that kind of stuff. But that's not what it is at all. It's a recharging. It is a focus. It is being able to say, I think this is what I want to do, and I think I know why. And it occurs to me that decisions that we make in life, sometimes we make them too quick, and then we go back on those decisions, or we change our mind too quickly. And when you make a decision, you should stay with that decision long enough to see where it's going to take you, whether it's business or personal, instead of reacting. If you're aware of what the OODA loop is, the guy that developed the OODA loop, Boyd was his name. He was an Air Force colonel who was one of the best air combat pilots in history. And I forget his first name, but everyone referred to him as Colonel Boyd. Colonel Boyd is the guy that developed the OODA loop. This is the concept that you observe, orient, decide, and then act. And you do that again and again and again. And in that way, you're able to adjust more quickly to an ever-changing landscape, and you'll always be on top of it because you're not in other words, you don't observe and react. You observe, orient, decide, and then act. And at each of those stages, you're able to think about what you're doing and why. Well, that's what solitude is. Solitude is the way that you get the airtime, so to speak, in fighter parlance, to get up, to get the altitude to actually have some options. It gives you some options because you're not running around and reacting constantly. And I think with people who travel, I think with people who do, any kind of a business where there's lots of people engaged in a creative or a business project and they're always around and you are always having to make decisions and everything else, you can get off plan. If you want to try something new, you don't have enough time to think about it so that when you actually do it, it's ill thought out and then you pull the plug on it, right? And that's where you make your mistakes because you're calibrating to a calibration rather than observing, orienting, deciding, and acting. And that's what's really cool about it. So this kind of segs us into HDHD or HDHD, whatever, what do they call that? Attention deficit disorder, basically. Hyperactive and attention deficit disorder. So we're going to talk about that very shortly. Well, I want to talk to yoga studio owners because this is very important. If you live in Minneapolis and St. Paul and you work for or own a yoga studio, you know, there's a lot of plumbing problems at some of these yoga studios. The showers don't work right. The water pressure isn't that great. The water doesn't get hot enough. You know, there's all these things that people complain about and so forth. So I'm going to recommend Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, and in this case, business, and in this case, yoga studios, because when it comes to keeping all of your systems up and running for your students, then you have to have somebody that knows what's going on when it comes to plumbing, heating, and that's important for hot studios or air conditioning problems. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They've got the reliable service. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown of St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. If you have a yoga studio, call these guys, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, or online at ryanplumbing.com. Well, then the other thing that happened today was I got an email from a friend who had listened or not listened to the podcast I did about going back to the 50s, that today it seems like an awful lot of people want to go back to a simpler time when everything was easy and the 1950s, this halcyon age where everything was sunny and it was always warm and, you know, it was perfect. And I did a whole podcast about it, so I don't need to go into depth on that one. But the email basically was a link to a guy's blog, and the guy went through this whole thing that went on for 2,000 words about how there used to be three TV stations and, you know, now that there are way more choices and the choices have quote unquote gone geometric, which doesn't make any sense when it comes to media, we all have a ADHD and we all are dealing with these problems and these kids with their cell phones again. And this is a common refrain, these kids with their cell phones. And of course, when you do yoga with a lot of young people. There are anywhere from 16 to 45, you know, which is not young, but you know what I mean. 60, it's an all ages thing. And there are a lot of young people doing yoga and they all bring their cell phones into class and all the teachers will gather around the desk and they all talk about the cell phone problem. And you'll go to a lot of studios and it'll say, you know, hey, put your cell phone in your locker or put it in your car or put it in your boot or take it in with you, but turn it off. Because we don't want people on their cell phones. And I've seen people answer their phones in class. I've seen phones ring in Sculpt and a young woman go, oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking to you. I'm in Sculpt. You know, people answer their phones. Well, that's really not a yoga thing. It's supposed to be a meditation. If you started in Bikram or you started doing, Ashtanga or particularly Iyengar, you know, the idea of even taking a cell phone into class with you or answering the cell phone in class is just it's like the ultimate. It's like bringing a cup of coffee into church. You know, that's just, we don't do that. I did it though. I did it many times when I was taking my son to church back in the day. I would always bring coffee in. I would hide it in my jacket. And then they caught me and made me stop doing it. But people bring their cell phones into class because they don't want to lose them. Because the most important thing, the most expensive thing that most millennials have is their cell phone, meaning their smartphone. I call them cell phones. That shows how old I am. But, you know, their smartphone, their device, their electronic device that they carry around with them, their stunt brain. All of our stunt brains, our computer is what it is. It's a handheld computer that we carry around with us. And nobody wants to leave that in their locker because they don't want to get it stolen, because most of the time we don't want to lock our lockers, because if we lock our lockers, then it just takes longer to get the thing open and take a shower and blah, 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 blah. So nobody wants to do that. So they bring it in with them because then they know where it is. And you can't believe the number of people who are older who just think that's the worst thing in the world. And then you will see people laying on their stomachs on their mats with their hands up in front of them, holding their device, checking their email, doing their thing. The point here is that for a certain group of people, this use of these devices with younger people, younger adults, is such a vexing problem that they just think it's the worst thing ever. And so they label the whole country. Well, you know, the whole country is ADHD because we have more media choices. And I thought about this tonight and I thought, you know, here's the thing. What are these people all doing? They are communicating. So they are using communications channels. So when you talk about media going geometric, let's talk real quick about this, because I think this is really, really important, because we need to understand a baseline of what is actually going on. So back in the day, you had broadcast radio, broadcast television, newspapers and magazines, and books. And that was pretty much the media. Today, you have broadcast television, you have broadcast radio, you have satellite radio, you have the internet, and you have SMS messaging and other products on the phone itself. And it all focuses on one device, the smartphone, the electronic device, portable electronic device. And the only thing that's different is the internet channel is a very robust form of communications, and it powers social media. So you have four or five different or six social media applications, whether it is Snapchat, so, you know, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name them. But it's all still coming over the internet. So this is like, think of these applications as robust forms of broadcast television shows. So Facebook is a page on the internet, and LinkedIn is a page on the internet that provides a function. And so when all these people are looking at their smartphones, doing their thing, that people decry, what are they doing? It's ADHD. It's doing all this stuff, ADHD. That's what it is. They're just communicating, and the 18-year-old girl who is communicating through the phone, or the 18-year-old boy who is robustly communicating through their device, is developing a proficiency for communication and collaboration. And a lot of times they're doing business. They're asking, hey, I'm looking for a job at such and such. Do you know anybody? Or they're networking, they're messaging, they're sending stuff to people. And because they're doing it on their yoga mat, somebody thinks that's a problem. And it made me realize, and I think this is really important. So we really haven't added that much media. Media hasn't necessarily become geometric. It's just that the applications are so useful. But a certain generation of Americans cannot understand this new Aquarian, if you will, collaborative instinct that uses technology to work together. Hey, we're all going to go out to such and such a place. Can you meet us there? Which is a mass text or some kind of a post on Facebook or Twitter. And they are networking, and they're using those channels to network. And as they get older, they're still going to be using those tools, because those are the tools we all use. And it's just amazing to me how judgmental people are toward almost everyone. It's just amazing how this heavy judgment thing is happening. And they think everybody's this because this is what they think. Well, you know, I don't think increased numbers of communications channels, especially where they have some direct application, even if it's just to get together with friends at the bar after yoga class, is a problem. I don't think we have that many more channels, and we're still in the early ages of this revolution, which is and this is really important, it's a collaborative revolution. So I grew up in radio, and radio is very much up, down, right, left, and win, lose. It's binary. It's very competitive. And if you don't get what you want, you feel like you've lost. And it takes a long time to get to sort of rinse that out of your system to understand that if you want to be successful in today's world, you have to collaborate. And these tools allow people to collaborate. So there's a method to the madness. And when people look at somebody and they say, oh, the whole country is ADHD, they don't have any attention span or anything else, nothing is as good as it used to be. I'm going to tell you, there are things on television, documentaries and dramas and comedies and all sorts of things that are every bit and as good or better than anything human beings have ever produced. It's just that today people say, well, all these people do is watch Netflix, or all these people. And when back in the 70s, if I watched Drugstore Cowboy the other night, and you know, Matt Dillon's character in Drugstore Cowboy is always complaining about the TV generation. These are TV babies. They're unpredictable. And I just thought that was interesting because he's a little bit older than they are. At the time, it's 1971. So he probably grew up in the late 50s and they grew up in the early and mid 60s. And they were quote unquote TV babies. And he grew up before there was TV. So you see that generational line. The whole point here is, what is attention deficit disorder? First of all, there is some controversy about whether it is even a disorder. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you can multitask in this world, you're good. I mean, that's what pilots do. You know, pilots are operating any number of complex systems all at once. And so you have a pilot and a co-pilot who are, you know, really multitasking different systems. And almost anything, half of the stuff I've done my whole life involved multitasking, where you're doing one thing. In fact, you're actually even talking. And at the same time, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do next. So you have to be able to multitask. But for me, and for me, when it comes to hyperactivity, you know, I wish that I had discovered yoga. And in particular, I wish I had discovered simply exercise when I was 19, because exercise has made all the difference in my life when it comes to hyperactivity, not hypertension. I definitely don't have hypertension. But hyperactivity, if I had gotten into sports, I think my life would have been a lot different. I was never inclined to. I didn't really want to. I was a small kid and I always felt like I couldn't do it. And I've learned since that I probably could have. I think if I'd found exercise, like things like weightlifting and running and so forth, I think I would have been, I would have had a much easier time in my young adulthood, because I would have found an outlet for all of that energy just coursing through my blood. That is the hyperactivity. So when people complain about yoga students with their devices being ADHD on the mat, you know, at least they're doing yoga. And because I'll just tell you the rest of this. So that really got me going, that whole discussion about, boy, things used to be so great, and we only had three TV stations. And if we had three TV stations today, half of these problems wouldn't be happening. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. You know, we're at the beginning of a great age. The internet is as important a discovery as anything that's happened, at least in the last 70 years since the discovery of atomic, you know, fission. And the next step from the internet to artificial intelligence is going to be even more significant in terms of all the things that it does. Now, this isn't a technology podcast. I do technology podcasts, so I could go on and on about all of the things, the doors that are being opened. But we're at the beginning of this age when these things are going to be different, and we're going to be required to collaborate and change the way we think about a lot of things. And some of the people who are older are just not going to be able to make that jump. Here's what I find fascinating. I would have been one of those people, except I have been doing yoga for 20 years, and not only am I more flexible physically, but I'm more flexible mentally. I'm more open mentally. I am softer mentally in terms of how I think about other people. And believe me, I have very strong feelings and judgments about things, and I'm not afraid to express them. So doing a lot of yoga is a really good thing for me. And it's also given me a sense of empathy, and it has also enabled me to, when things get crazy, to slow things down and literally almost slow time down to begin to think about what I'm going to do next and how I'm going to handle this and what I'm going to do there. So you put all this together and you come to a point where you're like, boy, this has been a huge gift in terms of so many things that that enable me to see. I've done podcasts about how I feel. It's raised my consciousness, and I'm really not sure what that means. Lots of people talk about ascension. I don't know that I don't. To me, that's, you know, the concept of ascension, that you do all this stuff and so you're a better human being, is really bothers me. You know, I don't agree with that. I do yoga because it makes me feel good and I love the effects physically, and it's a great thing to do. It makes you feel fantastic. I really don't care if I become a better human being or not. And we used to say, and I've said this on a couple of podcasts, what does yoga do? Well, it amplifies whatever's in there. So if you're a jerk, you're going to be a much bigger jerk. You know, if you're an ass, you're going to be a much bigger ass than if you didn't do yoga. And the reason for that is that it enables you to focus. And so when you focus, then you see what's really inside you. And that's what starts you to change. And so when it comes to ADHD, when it comes to, you know, solitude, all those things are really, really come into play in this podcast because, you know, they were seemingly random different events, but they kind of fit together for me. Do I still have hyperactivity disorder? I don't know. I mean, my mom would say, you know, refused to say that was some kind of a disorder. I like it. You know, I like being hyperactive. It enables me to, I can get more work done in 3 hours than most people can get work done in a week when I sit down to actually focus. So when it's time to work, I am, you know, perfectly willing to work. And most of being willing to work is just putting aside, you know, gratification and sitting down and saying, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to make this list. I'm going to build this business plan. I'm going to, you know, go through all these congressional districts. I'm going to read the tax bill. I'm going to figure out how to do a yoga podcast. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And then sitting down and actually doing it. Yeah. I mean, I'll get it done when it's time to get it done, so to speak, because I can focus pretty much like a laser. And to me, that's a symptom of the same thing. It's just that for hyperactive people, it takes a long time to get to the point where they can focus. And that's the processing time. We just take more time to process. And that's why the solitude is great. When I was married, when I was with other people all the time, it builds up and it's very difficult to clear it. And yoga helps with that. So, you know, you can be with people and you can share with people and you can collaborate with people, and it's not as hard because you're kind of in a we practice together in a room, but we are all doing our own practice. So we're in a form of solitude. But in terms of the hyperactive stuff, I think it's made all the difference in the world. So if you have a hyperactive kid, you need to, you know, get them doing a lot of exercise, more than you can imagine. You know, I found out in this process that I have a very high capacity for a lot of exercise. I can do things that people my age can't do, and I can do things longer than people my age can't do. And sometimes people considerably younger, because I do it all the time. And it's an amazing thing that when you realize you have this capacity for exercise, capacity for running, capacity for doing yoga, capacity for anything, that starts to open your eyes to the other things that you can do because you have all this capacity. Now, some people are probably like, this guy's completely crazy. But I don't think so. And I think a lot of people that do yoga would be like, absolutely. They would nod their head and they would say, that's exactly the same experience I had. And I don't care what it is that you're doing. If you are doing Yoga Sculpt as a play, it's a series that people do. You do yoga with weights and there's a lot of cardio and it's, you know, supposedly really hard. Honestly, I've taken hot classes that are way harder. I've taken power yoga classes from really gifted teachers or experienced teachers that are way harder than any Sculpt I ever took. And so people are intimidated, and it took a teacher saying to me, you should do Sculpt, Bob Davis. And I said, well, why should I do Sculpt? And she said, well, I have the easiest class. Well, little did I know that, and she denies that she said this, but she said, I have the easiest class. And so I said, well, I'll take your class. And so I took her class, probably the hardest thing I've ever done. She still has. She is one of the most demanding yoga teachers I've ever taken classes from, any kind of yoga class. And it's great, by the way. And you know who you are if you're listening to this. You know who you are. But those are the most rewarding classes, the ones where you are climbing really hard, when you are working really hard, when you're like, I can't even figure out what I'm doing right now, and you're trying to breathe. Those are the ones where you really grow. So those teachers, the teachers that are really demanding, are the really great teachers. It doesn't mean the teachers that are easy, supposedly, aren't great either, because sometimes we like to have a class that's just relaxing and you can really stretch out and do the things that you do. But that's why I started doing Sculpt. And then once I did it, I was hooked. I got up the next day and I was like, I got to do that again. And so I started doing Sculpt more. So now I'm doing 3 sculpts a week in addition to everything else. It's a huge part of my daily practice. And I'm not bragging. I'm just trying to say that I think all hyperactive people have that characteristic where they can focus and for short periods, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, and get a huge amount of stuff done. They can focus on one thing like a laser shot and really perceive important things. We are able to see things that in patterns that other people may not necessarily see. And finally, you know, when it comes to doing stuff like physical stuff, we just have a high capacity for doing that. And I think that's really great. So what? First of all, if people have hypertension, or I keep calling it hypertension, hyperactivity disorder, so to speak, an attention deficit disorder, how do you know that that's not something new in terms of a human development, that this is an adaptation to the tools that we have today, which are more electronic in nature? How do you know that it's not actually a good thing? Especially if people are collaborating using all these tools. And I did talk a little too much about technology, but it is a vexing problem at the yoga studio, the people bringing their phones in. But it's interesting. I'm just going to say this real quick because those of you who Sculpt know what I'm talking about. So the Sculpt series, much more social than the other two. The other, you know, power yoga and Bikram hot yoga is very, people get very pretentious about it. And you know, we don't talk in here and stuff like that. And when you go to Sculpt classes, everybody's talking. It's like a bunch of monkeys. You know, everybody's just, and that's just how it is. So everybody brings their phone in because while everyone's talking and you're listening to hip hop, you're checking your messages. I don't do it because I don't want the thing in there with me. But I totally see and understand when a person who's 27 years old, just got their work, they do social media, they do whatever, they come to do yoga or they're a medical professional like a nurse or a doctor or something, and they're laying there and they're getting ready to do yoga and they're like, oh my God, I get that text message. Now, the idea is you're supposed to put that stuff away and not think about it. And so when class starts, you got to turn it over so you can't see it if somebody calls you, and definitely have it on the ringer off. But I think all this obsession with other people and their phones and their devices and everything else is, you know, it bothers me. Sorry I said you know. It just bothers me. We just need to stop making judgments. Can we stop judging for just, you know, an hour a day? That would be the best. And there was a point tonight I was doing a class and it was really hard. And she was saying, you know, find something you can let go of. And I thought, I wish I could just get let go of all my judgments of right now, just for 2 minutes of all this stuff. So I think we'd all be a lot happier. And we'd all see that there's really cool things about what other people do, even though we may not agree with the way that they do them, or we may have our backup about that particular guy. So thanks for listening to a crazy, off-the-wall, easy talker, Gonzo Yoga podcast 718, The Bob. I'm not even going to edit that out. I'm just going to leave that in. Podcast 718, The Bob Davis Podcasts. Don't forget yoga studio owners, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for home or business. They are HVAC specialists, so that's heating and air conditioning, and they are there for reliable service, especially for businesses. That means yoga studios that have problems with not getting hot water, that have problems with, you know, no water pressure, that have problems with toilets don't flush, that have problems with urinals. I'm telling you, this is the stuff behind the scenes nobody knows about. So you yoga studio owners, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. Once you sign up as a client, you get emergency service, and they are awesome. Also, check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. All right, I'll see you on the mat. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 718. Always a student, a yoga podcast about a bunch of stuff.